Hopefully, on the other end of the line, we have Francis Doherty from the Father Peter McVerry Trust. Good morning, Francis.
Good morning, Donnie.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. Very busy.
I can well imagine. We have reports being, conferences being held today in relation to the homeless situation. Something that it's a drum I have been beating, Francis, I have to be honest, for quite a while. I've interviewed several people in relation to it. And I think your founder, Peter McVerry, a long time ago described this as a national crisis. It's not improving, Francis.
No, it's not. And the family figures that have been released in the last 24 hours again sort of show that there's definitely no let-up in the emergency. And what is really sort of unfortunate about all this is that it's, in the vast majority of cases, it's entirely preventable, and it's sort of coming down to policy decisions and that have been made in some government departments and by some outgoing government ministers in relation to issues like social welfare protection and rent supplement rates. So it's, as you said, sort of Father McVerry has been sort of highlighting this sort of stuff that we knew was going to be coming down the tracks if action wasn't taken, and unfortunately action wasn't taken, and we're in the midst of an emergency that's growing by the day.
Yeah, and it is growing by the day. And I mean, we hear figures, and the first person that I heard addressing this matter recently was Peter McVerry himself, quickly followed, I may add, by Barry Cowan in the Dáil, who basically said that there are potentially another 40,000 families going to be hit by this as a result of vulture funds coming in and taking over properties in the country.
Yeah, there seems to be almost an attempt to forget or gloss over the sort of the mortgage arrears issue, and probably because it doesn't fit with the picture that the outgoing government was trying to paint, and that things had turned around, the economy was picking up. But in actual fact, we've never actually dealt with the legacy of the crash, and that applies to sort of the mortgage arrears, the people with their family homes who are struggling to make ends meet and struggling to make repayments and face a system that is geared towards the financial institutions as opposed to the families and their homes. And the number of buy-to-let properties in arrears of sort of 2 years or more is in and around the region of sort of 16,000. So there's sort of 16,000 rental properties that could be repossessed at sort of short notice by banks through the courts that would affect people in the private rental market as well as people who are in mortgage arrears with their own homes. And I think that unless that issue is sort of fundamentally addressed and there's protection given and steps taken to keep families in their homes and protect tenants who are paying their rent every month from being evicted, that, you know, we'll face a wave of homelessness that would be unprecedented in sort of modern Irish history, and it would be a wave of homelessness that homeless services would be unable to deal with.
Yeah, and what strikes me, Francis, you know, listening to you and Peter and other people indeed who deal with this on a daily and nightly basis, is we are in a position now where this is accepted by everybody, bar the powers that be, that this is a national crisis of epidemic proportions. Like, if it's at that level now, what is it going to be like if all these extra people are added to that list?
Well, but that's exactly it. In some respects, what we're doing on the front line is responding to emergency that happen every day, and we've really been in a state of emergency for a period of 2 years now, where we've been trying to deal with this constant flow of new presentations to homeless services, particularly in urban areas like Dublin, like Cork and Limerick and Galway. And what we're really finding is that instead of actually sort of tackling the root causes and the real big issues, what we're sort of seeing is that the powers that be, if you like, are waiting for some major incident or unfortunate sort of passing of an individual in homeless services in order to come out with a knee-jerk response that kicks the can down the line, if you like, and offers a stopgap solution in the form of we'll provide more emergency beds, but in actual fact, they're not actually really dealing or trying to get to grips with the cause of homelessness and trying to prevent people coming into homeless services. Because once somebody comes into homeless services, it's incredibly difficult, no matter how hard you tried, no matter who you are and what your needs are, it's going to be very difficult to get yourself back out of homeless services very quickly, because once you drop in, then it's incredibly difficult to get yourself set up and back out and into the system, be it the private rental market or local authority housing or housing provided by bodies such as ourselves. So what we've been trying to tell the government is that, A, we can't deal with the numbers in homeless services unless we stop new cases coming in. They haven't stopped new cases coming in. If anything, they've picked up in the last 3 to 4 months. And we're trying to tell them that you have to look at the big picture, not just the tinkering around the edge of the problem. You have to go in and tackle the root causes, and that is reforming the rental market. That is seeing how we can build more houses. And we think that there's no point saying, well, we look to the housing market and for-profit developers to build houses. The state, the local authorities, the non-profit bodies have to begin building houses, and until such time as they sort of see that, then we're not going to actually deal with any of the sort of fundamental issues that are leading to the homeless crisis as a sort of the very sort of end of a series of failures in the housing system.
In relation there to something you said, Francis, I mean, what are they waiting for? You know, like the name and the incident surrounding the tragedy that befell Jonathan Corry, I mean, if that wasn't a wake-up call for the powers that be, and I'm not, you know, I'd be very quick, I suppose, to quote Peter in relation to this. Like, you know, a lot of people were laying the blame squarely and fairly at the door of Alan Kelly, but I think Peter made a very valid point that Alan Kelly on his own is not the main, while he's a player in it, you need the joined up thinking from the other government departments and the councils and the corporations and all the people with a vested interest, for want of a better word. But outside of that, I mean, what more of a wake up call does anybody in authority need other than the death of a man basically at the gates of our government?
Yeah, and I think it's sort of, unfortunately, it paints a really stark picture of our values, and I particularly think the values of politicians in the Dáil and people in senior positions in government departments, because if Jonathan Corry's death was extremely unfortunate, but the reality is that people are dying in homeless services regularly, and it's incredibly, you know, disappointing that the vulnerable people are sort of left to spend months, years in these situations where they don't have privacy, they don't have dignity, and they don't have their right to a home respected. And while organisations such as Peter McVray, Trust, Focus and Simon are trying to bang down the doors of the politicians and the government departments to get them to act, to get them to deal with the issue, it's only really become sort of a political issue when the likes of the vested interests become involved, and the people that are concerned with big developments or big sort of for-profit housing schemes, or when maybe IBEC or the big foreign multinationals say, well, actually, you know what, this housing shortage is having an impact on our workers and it's going to have an impact on how much we're going to invest in the country. It's only really then that the politicians and the government and the Taoiseach begin to care and begin to look at this issue. It's suddenly then they put a value on it, and they have for years ignored the fact that there's thousands of their own citizens incredibly vulnerable, joined by hundreds and hundreds of families over the last number of months that are in homeless services, that they really haven't cared about that situation. And, you know, we're not making a judgment call based on what they're saying. We're making a judgment call based on what they're doing, because it's long past talking about the issue. It's really We want action. And the fact of the matter is that the person that has to deliver the action is the leader of the country. And so whoever becomes Taoiseach in the next government, then that person needs to be the person that drives the cross-government response. You know, environment is responsible for homeless services. It's responsible for planning, land and housing delivery. But equally, finance, public expenditure is in charge of, you know, intervening in the banks, protecting people in mortgage arrears, funding capital developments, giving loans to charities to build houses. Equally, the Department of Social Protection is probably the largest driver of homelessness in the country because they refuse to raise rent supplement rates. We have the Department of Health failing to invest in mental health services, failing to ensure that people aren't being discharged from hospitals and other institutions into homeless services. And we have a Department of Children and Youth Affairs that has played absolutely no role to date in dealing with the family and children in homeless services. Like we have over 800 families in homelessness at the minute, over 1,600 children. And it was only in January of this year that TUSLA, the Child and Family Agency, were able to appoint one staff member as a liaison officer for all those families. So it's, you know, look past the words and look at what they're doing and what they're delivering. And, you know, it's just, it's not enough. It's nowhere near enough.
You are listening to Northside Today. I'm Donnie Tarrant, and I'm speaking with Francis Doherty from the Father Peter McVerry Trust. You know, there's two things, Francis, from speaking with you this morning, and we are very grateful for you for taking the time to talk to us, because I do realise that it is an extremely busy day for you today. But, you know, we commemorated the 100 years of 1916 at the weekend, and you know, there's one line in that proclamation which jumps out at everybody, and it's the one line, I suppose, that everybody can quote, where it says that all the children of the nation shall be cherished equally. It would, and it's a straight question that I'm going to ask, Francis, and I want a straight answer in so much as you can give me a straight answer. Have you got anything from the powers that be other than tea and sympathy?
No, we wrote to all of the leaders of the political parties in the Dáil, large and small, left-wing, right-wing, centre parties, on the 2nd of March, asking for an urgent meeting with Peter McVerry Trust to discuss the problems and our proposals for sort of solving the issues as we see it. One political party has offered to meet us, so I think that's a clear indication of, you know, they'll talk about it, they'll do the media on it, they'll, you know, stand up in the Dáil and grandstand and make, you know, grand gestures and big speeches and, you know, chastise each other for who's responsible and who needs to do what. But at the end of the day, when it comes to real action and, you know, a willingness to really get in and solve the issues, we haven't seen any evidence from anybody really that there's a genuine attempt or genuine willingness to do something about the issue.
Francis, there's one thing that I mean, there's a lot of things, should I say, in relation to this homeless crisis which irks me and irks me greatly. But there's one thing that, you know, and I've heard sort of half answers and excuse me, and little percentage answers of in relation to it, but It was brought home again to me last night, and I was cognizant of it because I was thinking of our interview this morning. But I was looking at an RT, the RT News last night, where they were up at the apartment or the flat complex there at Constitution Hill, close by where the Lewis works are going on. And the reporter was doing a piece to camera. Obviously, he was on the ground floor. But the number of boarded up apartments that was there was absolutely disgusting. Now, you know, no more than myself, you travel around the city as well, Francis. I mean, you can go down, we can go down Dorset Street, we can go down Dominic Street, we can have a look at that place in Constitution Hill. I know there's construction going on at the top of Chapel Lizard Hill there in Ballyfermot at the moment, where they're renovating what was an old folks complex. But the amount of, you know, we leave new bills on modular housing to one side for a moment, but the actual amount of apartments and houses in every estate in the city that are lying idle and could be refurbished and nothing happening. Why is that when we have such an appalling crisis on our doorstep?
I think it just comes back to a willingness to actually sit down and do the work and get them up and running again. Like we're starting to work on Monday on a project on the inner city of a block of old OAP apartments that have been vacant for almost 10 years. And the amount of bureaucracy it's taken for us to get the project over the line has just been horrendous. Like, trying to get it through the local authority, trying to get it through the...
Can I just ask you now, Francis, in relation to that development that you're talking about, and you're starting it on Monday, so this would be a really good, I suppose, litmus test. Work is commencing on Monday, but when did you and the Peter McVerry Trust and the people that are coordinating this with you, when did you first move in relation to this project?
About 18 months ago.
So you're a year and a half and there's still not a tradesman on site and the number of homeless people growing by the day. I mean,
yeah.
You know...
It is infuriating because at different times we are left to hound basically different people responsible for these sort of decisions throughout the chain. And it takes up an inordinate amount of resources for an organisation that is trying to, A, respond by providing shelter on a nightly basis and open new shelters, and B, provide housing so that there's options for people to get out of our shelters. And, you know, it's incredibly frustrating that we're left to put so much energy and resources into it to get what is a relatively small project, but important project for us, over the line. And I think there is no logical answer as to why things can't move faster and more can't be done. Like, it's not only just the properties that are held by the local authorities that are boarded up, but it's incredibly frustrating to also see the properties in private ownership that are left idle and vacant while speculators are allowed to leave them empty, wait for the market to rise, maybe have a site or attach to sort of derelict properties in the hope that they'll get planning permission further down the line as the market sort of is squeezed further to make bigger profits. I think what we're really looking for is the local authorities to step up and say, right, we're going to tackle this head on, we're going to make every available house available, we're going to compulsory purchase buildings that are left empty, that are in private ownership. We're going to compulsory purchase sites in the city, in the local authorities, the four local authorities across Dublin. We're going to go out, buy sites, buy buildings that aren't being put to best use, and we're going to put them back into use, not just for social housing, but for things like renting them at cost so that they're much cheaper than the market rents that are out there, so that people on low incomes or middle incomes can get affordable rental properties over the longer term, so that they might be able to save towards meeting a mortgage on a house further down the line if that's something that they want to do. But there is no barriers to anybody with the will and the want to go out there and actually do something about the situation. And it's what Peter has said, that there's no genuine political will to drive this home and to drive a solution to it. I think that what we've heard in the last few days about the negotiations and Fine Gael's proposed housing plan is that they're going to return to the mistakes of the past that led to the housing bust, and that they will rely almost solely on the private property section to provide housing for everybody across the housing system. And we know that just won't work, and it's a very expensive, imperfect answer to a very complex problem that needs to be with housing that needs to be provided by the state first and foremost, and then supported by private developers and housing charities like Peter McVerry Trust.
Francis, while you were talking there, I have to tell you, I had you on the clock. I was just counting the seconds here in front of me, and I think 35 seconds of your last contribution, in 35 seconds, you put forward three, four, if not five proposals that would if not eradicate, go an awful long way towards solving the problems that we have at the moment, towards solving the crisis that we have at the moment. Like, you can do this in 35 seconds because you're at the coalface and you see it every day of the week. And yet, the powers that be, as I said, they give you tea and sympathy, but there's nothing practical being done. Now, I suppose that brings me maybe to the next point that I want to address, Francis, and I am cognizant of the time and I am cognizant of the fact that you're under pressure, but I mean, it is an unbelievable topic, and it's something that, why it isn't even more pressing on the agenda is beyond me, but modular housing, where are you in relation to modular housing, Francis?
I think, to put it in context, we started looking at modular housing about 2 years ago. And I suppose modular housing is, as we see it, is a way of building houses. And if you think about it, we have a very sort of set way of building houses and properties generally in Ireland. It's bricks and mortar. It's always been bricks and mortar. And we haven't really had any innovation in that. What we looked at when we looked at case studies in the Netherlands and New York and Scotland and other places around modular housing, we saw it as a way of quickly and cheaply putting together high quality housing units. Everything from a single bungalow to a semi-D to an estate of houses to blocks of multi-story apartments, it can be done through modular housing. I think the problem is that we've done it in a very Irish way. So the 22 units that are being opened, hopefully, finally, in Poppentry in April.
Yes, April, which we should point out is 5 months again behind the original due date for them, because they were due in December, if my memory is right.
Yeah, those 22 units are not modular housing. They're timber frame houses with, block and traditional build methods applied. So they're sort of quick or rapid builds in a sense, but they're not modular homes. So people are very wary because of our experiences with prefabs and our education, our healthcare system, that of sort of very low quality, expensive sort of solutions that we've used in the past. But if done right, and that's a very big if, given sort of our experience to date, modular housing could play a very important role in quickly building accommodation units for a variety of people. Like, modular housing is used by universities in the Netherlands for student accommodation, and we have a huge student accommodation crisis in particularly in Dublin. When you think that the amount of students that come in to Dublin and try to get properties in the private rental market are competing at market rates. I think there's something like 25,000 units of accommodation needed over the next few years to keep up with demand in Dublin for the students alone. We think that universities should be given the money to build modular apartment units on their campuses or on their land that would take those students out of the private rental market and free up units for other people to get out of homelessness or to, you know, have sort of more choice in the private rental market, because, you know, there's no point in students trying to scrape together money or their parents or their families trying to scrape together money to pay exorbitant rents where they're already paying fees to get them into college or third level. We think that the colleges could definitely use modular housing to accommodate their students. We think that modular housing would be a good fit for, if you think of sort of rows of houses or sites in the city centre where there's sort of maybe an old house was knocked down or there was fire damage and it's in need of demolition, and there's sort of it's an awkward site. Modular housing where you can come in, put a crane in place and just drop in apartments quickly and effectively. We think, you know, it definitely has a role to play, I suppose. It's not the solution. It's just about giving extra choice and diversifying and having a bit of innovation in how we deliver housing. Unfortunately, we've probably already lost the PR battle on modular houses because Poppentry has been so badly delayed and hasn't finished yet. The other sites that have been put forward have been pushed back now by 6 months or more as well. So when we were promised 500 modular houses by this summer, it looks like we'll have 22 rapid builds. So in actual fact, we haven't seen one single modular home delivered in the 12 months since they were announced.
And Francis, very quickly before we go, one thing, I interviewed Anthony Flynn from the Inner City Helping Homeless. I presume you know Anthony. Recently, and I mean, no more than yourself, they're doing tremendous work as well. But a point he made was that there's a big media circus surrounding the opening of winter beds for the homeless. But, you know, what a lot of people may not realise is that these beds closed in March or April, I think, as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's a contract put in place in October for what are called the cold weather beds. And what has happened in the last few years, because of the number of people in emergency accommodation, that these beds have just then, come April, just been sort of subsumed into the broader sort of homeless sector. So what actually will in effect happen is that they will cease to be cold weather beds and that they actually become longer term emergency accommodation. So there's sort of no way that anyone in the sector would allow the homeless executive or the local authorities to shut down beds and put people on the streets. It will definitely be the case that the cold weather beds, the services that are operating will be kept open, or new services will come in place to transfer people across to longer term placements. But it's really unacceptable that we're so reliant on emergency accommodation and that we're sort of warehousing so many people in unsuitable long-term accommodation.
Well, Francis, I certainly couldn't agree with you more, but I have a horrible sinking feeling that this is something that we are going to be discussing again in the future. I think, Francis, that you will be no stranger to Northside today. All that remains for me to do is to thank you so much for joining us today, because I do appreciate with the day that's in it that you're extremely busy. And all I can do on our behalf, on behalf of all our listeners here, is to wish you all the best with your endeavours, because the problem and the crisis that you are dealing with is of monumental proportions. Francis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Tony. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Bye-bye.